Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. Coming up on today's program, a military standoff at a Nike plant in Indonesia over low wages. Can China's capital, Beijing, be cleared up of smog? They have seen the worst air pollution on record this past week. The Philippine government says it plans to tackle gun murders in the country. The Philippines has one of the highest murder rates in the world. And then we head off to Vietnam to find out what it's like to do business in that country and what can one expect. We have this and more on this edition of Focus Asia Pacific, putting the focus on the Asia Pacific. Workers making Nike shoes in Indonesia say they've been forced to accept less than a minimum wage, and they've been stood over by military personnel, especially hired to intimidate them. Activists say workers earn so little, they get just enough to afford one meal a day. Last year, millions of workers went on strike in Indonesia over low pay and the cost of living increases. The government lifted wage rates, but workers at a Nike factory in West Java say they were made to sign a petition to support the country's claim to be exempt from paying the new wage. We have this story from George Roberts from the ABC.
You all have to sign it, says a man standing over workers at what the ABC's been told is one of Nike's contracted Indonesian factories. He makes them agree to sign a petition supporting the factory's campaign not to pay them the minimum wage. The woman who took the mobile phone footage doesn't want to be named, but says she and other workers tried to reject the pay restriction.
We got summoned by military personnel that the company hired to interrogate us, and they intimidated us. The first thing that scared me was his high tone of voice, and he banged the table. And also he said that inside the factory there were a lot of military intelligence officers. That scared me.
She says it all happened at one of Nike's manufacturers in the West Java city of Sukabumi. Local governments across Indonesia have put up the minimum wage after mass protests last year, but unions here say at least six Nike contracted factories have applied to be exempt from paying it. Surya Chandra from the Trade Union Rights Centre says there's a loophole to get an exemption.
You have to provide financial conditions of the company in the last 2 years, which show some not profit, and then you have to accept consent from the workers directly, which not that easy, because for the workers the new wages it's actually better and fairer.
So it's claimed that employees were forced to. That means they'll only get paid $3.70 a day instead of $4. Activists say that after rent and transport to work, it's only enough to afford one meal. One activist, Jim Keady, runs an American NGO called Educating for Justice.
You know, I would say it is a clear violation of Nike's code of conduct. And in a more general sense, you know, the minimum wage is a poverty wage alone. To pay less than the minimum wage, I just think it is absolutely runs counter to Nike's public claims that, you know, they care about the welfare of their workers and they want to see them, you know, have decent lives.
In a statement, a spokesman for Nike says the company's investigating. Nike expects contract factory workers to be paid at least the minimum wage required by country law and provide legally mandated benefits, including holidays and leave and statutory severance when employment ends. The ABC asked Nike headquarters if the company is aware of the allegations about the use of military personnel and the intimidation of workers into accepting a lower than minimum wage. After a pause, the spokesman said words to the effect of, "Yes, I'm still here. I've told you what I can tell you. I'm not going to get into the details. We're investigating and we'll just have to leave it at that." Jim Keady says the situation would be easy to fix.
You know, you really have to break it down in human terms. Like somebody like Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, the guy's worth $10.3 billion. How much more do you need? You know, if you made a billion less, you could lift millions of people out of poverty. And I'm not asking for charity. I don't want him to just give his money away. I'm talking about justice. Pay the people what they deserve. They've earned it. Give them a decent wage.
He says Nike made $2.2 billion in profits last year, and it would cost $1 extra per pair of shoes to pay the minimum wage.
And that was George Roberts reporting from Indonesia. China's capital, Beijing, endured its worst air pollution on record. The city was wrapped in choking yellow smog earlier this week, and it only started to clear up on Wednesday. With children and the elderly being told not to go outside at all, even the state-run newspaper, The Global Times, used the editorial to call for greater official transparency on the risks of dirty air. But what can be done to make China's rapid development a bit cleaner? We have this story from Kandahar Sapati.
Smog and pollution is not uncommon in Beijing, but Sunday's reading of air quality indexes in most regions of Beijing hit 500, the highest level. Recent windless days saw pollutants accumulating and readings for PM2.5, an airborne particle with a diameter small enough to deeply penetrate the lungs, reaching as high as 900 micrograms per cubic meter. Our correspondent Hui Fente describes the scene in Beijing.
Having an AQI of above 400 means that the sun cannot pierce through the clouds. Visibility is very poor, and the advice being given to residents of Beijing is to stay indoors.
High levels of PM2.5 have been linked to health problems, including respiratory disease, heart disease, and lung cancer. A study commissioned by Greenpeace China and conducted by Peking University's College of Environmental Sciences attributed 8,500 deaths last year in just four cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Jian, and Guangzhou, to PM2.5 pollutants. Chou Rong, Greenpeace China's climate and energy campaigner, says the economic cost related to these deaths amounts to $1 billion. But she says this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Because of the data limitation, we can only do the actual deaths caused by PM2.5. And we don't include the chronic deaths and also the hospital visiting and other loss caused by the air pollution. So we would say that the real cost would be even higher.
China's rapid urbanization and industrialization has led to a dramatic increase in the consumption of coal and car-clogged cities, the two main reasons for escalating air pollution. With affluence, the Chinese people, more aware of the impact of pollution, have now forced the government to reform its monitoring system. Ma Jun, the director of the Institute of Public and Environmental Affairs in Beijing, explains.
So more than 70 cities throughout China have started monitoring and disclosed the real-time monitoring data of the PM2.5 ozone and other pollutants. So actually, it is the first time for the Chinese public to be able to have much better understanding about the level of pollution. And the government has also been trying to publicize all the ways for people to protect themselves during the smog day.
But for Beijing residents like our correspondent Wei Fente, advice to stay indoors during the worst of the smog is not the solution to the problem.
Because it affects the quality of life of everyone in this city. And even though the advice is for people to stay indoors, but realistically, how can you possibly keep yourself indoors 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? So something has to be done.
So what can be done? Chou Rong from Greenpeace says the government can address the problem in three ways. Put a cap on coal consumption, restructure the economy and replace manufacturing industries with service industries, especially in the highly polluted eastern seaboard cities, and develop renewable energies like solar and wind power. With some cities already addressing the problem, Chou Rong remains hopeful.
In Beijing, they already set the target that in the next 5 years, they will reduce half coal burning. And also in the south, Guangzhou City already announced that in the next 5 years, they will considering reduce coal consumption. So we do see hope that they will starting from a city and then it will be expanded to the whole eastern region.
For three decades, China has pursued rapid economic development at the expense of its environment. Affluent Chinese now want the government to address their health concerns. And Ma Jun says the government has the difficult job of striking a balance between economic growth and environmental protection.
This is going to involve very hard choice. It won't be easy to hit the balance. I think the people's understanding would become a quite important factor to help the government to make those hard choices.
The Philippines has one of the highest murder rates in the world. and many of those killed are gun-related. The country is soaked in weaponry, both legal and illegal. But there's a huge public debate underway over gun control after a mass shooting of a drug-crazed politician last week and the deaths of two children from stray bullets fired during New Year's celebrations. Tom Failey has more.
The Philippines president, Benigno Aquino, is an unashamed gun enthusiast. And to the delight of the pro-gun lobby in the Philippines, he's been quick to make clear where he stands on the issue.
And the law recognizes my right to self-defense. Hindi ko lang, no? Magandang headline. Total gun ban. Ito. Pero knee-jerk reaction.
It sounds nice, no? Total gun ban. But the total does not happen because the outlaw will not.
President Aquino says he'd rather go after the criminals and private armed groups, especially in view of the upcoming midterm congressional elections. Official figures say there are 1.2 million legal guns in the hands of civilians in the Philippines and 600,000 loose or unregistered weapons in circulation, a problem compounded by smuggling and the country's long-running communist and Muslim insurgencies. But researcher and prominent gun control advocate Jasmine Norio Galatze says the official figures are a gross underestimate, suggesting the real number is likely to be more than 4 million. She describes gun ownership in the Philippines as pervasive and her country one of the region's hottest spots for gun violence. But she says very few people are talking about a total weapons ban.
The first thing that the government should do is to have a crackdown on the loose firearms in the country, because 90% of the crimes, according to the Philippine National Police in the country, are facilitated by the use of loose firearms. So I think that if we crack down on loose firearms, that will solve a lot of problems.
Ernesto Tabuhara leads the lobby group Pro-Gun, a lawyer and regular contributor to congressional hearings on the gun control issue. He says President Aquino and Pro-Gun are at one about the need to avoid any hasty reaction to the recent spate of killings.
He basically lifted half of what he said, word for word, from our recent statement on our website, progun.ph, wherein we said that gun control is in fact a knee-jerk reaction to isolated incidents in the Philippines without having been thought out carefully and regarding what the extent of what has to be done in order to solve the entire problem.
Attorney Tabuhara says he condemns the recent acts of violence and says his thoughts are with the victims. And while the pro-gun lobby supports a bill currently before the Senate that streamlines and tightens up firearms regulations, he says it's not just about guns.
The murder and rape and homicides and all the other crimes that are committed in the Philippines are committed by a combination of all other factors and different other implements and instruments, you know, aside from guns. So this is really a crime problem that we have in the Philippines and not just a gun problem. The approach should be holistic.
One area where both sides of the debate are in agreement is that, on paper at least, it's not easy or cheap to obtain a legal firearm. The real problem is that existing regulations are not enforced strictly enough. But gun control advocate Jasmine Nareo Galatze also argues there is another key factor at play, the bloody and violent nature of Philippine politics in at least some parts of the country. Election campaigns are routinely associated with a horrifying death toll.
Gun ownership is associated with power. So the power comes from the barrel of a gun. People admire you and look up to you when you have guns or when you have an arsenal of weapons. So that's another thing. You know, people here fight tooth and nail to be able to get elected. So if they cannot be elected through the power of the ballot, they'll do it through the power of the bullet.
Nevertheless, Dr. Galatze says she's optimistic progress is being made. Tougher election time bans on the carrying of guns in public have seen the body count drop dramatically over the last 10 years. And she says, as an experiment, the three-month ban for this year's poll should be extended for the whole year.
Let's check the statistics, let's check the number of casualties, let's check the murder and homicide rates and see if that's going to actually be reduced, and then go from there.
While the pro-gun lobby's Ernesto Tabuhara doesn't agree with that proposition, he does echo the view that progress in some areas is being made.
We have conducted a massive education program for gun owners over the past several years over the internet and through free seminars, which wherein we basically teach gun owners proper rules of safety and protocol regarding the proper handling of firearms, and it has by and large worked. The number of gun related injuries in New Year's Eve due to stray bullets has gone considerably down. over the past 5 years than it was before. And while we have still some tragic incidents like that 7-year-old child who was shot and killed in Caloocan City, but those are basically isolated incidents, though regrettable, compared to the hundreds of victims that we used to have in the 80s and the 90s.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio. We'll give you our contact details later on in the program. For almost 20 years now, investors, when they had their eyes on Asia, were focusing on China. The original Asian tigers of South Korea, Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan have seen a tremendous amount of competition from China. But this is changing. As wages increase in China, the cost of production is also going up, and the cost of doing business as well. Many investors and many business people are eyeing other regions of Asia, in particular Southeast Asia, countries like Sri Lanka, India, Cambodia, Laos, Burma, that recently just opened up to the world, and Vietnam. Some of the leading manufacturers in the world have actually moved to Vietnam because of the low wages and production costs. But there is a price to pay. Unlike China, Vietnam still has a long way to go to having an adequate infrastructure, but this is changing fast. To talk about the challenges of doing business in Vietnam, we're now joined by Philip. He is one of the owners of Smooth Waxworks in Vietnam. My first question to him was, why Vietnam?
Well, actually, Vietnam is today full of business opportunities for many reasons. Actually, the market in many industries, especially retail industry, is opening. The Vietnamese consumer is very willing to try new products, new services that are available overseas and not yet in Vietnam. So they are very keen to experience new services. So that's the main reason why we chose Vietnam as the first country to start this venture with my partners.
Now, what are some of the challenges that you would face? I mean, when China opened up, and other countries in Asia, one of the challenges was because they hadn't been exposed to it, there were a lot of difficulties and let's use a better term, growing pains at the beginning. What is it like for Vietnam? Is the Vietnamese government now putting a structure in place where it is a lot more favorable to have foreign investors come in?
Yeah, actually, even though the barrier to enter this market is still there, meaning that, for example, foreigners cannot own a small company or retail business. Even though the way to get this license, it's getting easier and easier. The Vietnamese government is really trying to open up the capabilities to attract foreign investors by providing special governmental office to get the license, to get the business license. Is still difficult because most of those people don't speak English, for example. That's one of the difficulties. But definitely, from one year to another, it's getting easier. Another way is the capital investment. It's pretty low, and it's getting lower and lower for the foreigners, for example.
The way you're describing it, it's almost, let's say, like China was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was not there in China 20 to 30 years ago, but when we read or when we exchange with other business people all around Asia, it sounds like to be exactly the same principle. Yes, definitely.
Now, the business that you have in Vietnam, it's called Smooth. It is how would you describe it?
Smooth, actually, it's a new way, or at least, actually, is a salon. It's providing waxing services, providing nail art, providing foot massage, manicure, pedicure. So, which is actually very attracting the new generation of the Vietnamese, the new middle class, the new business woman. So they're very attracted to that kind of service. I mean, like everywhere else in Asia, what it's new, what we try to bring to Vietnam is a higher level of quality, higher level of hygiene. Of course, we bring additional design of the shop, additional atmosphere. I mean, that is music, that is the fragrance, that is the quality of the customer service. So basically, they already have this kind of service, but we try to bring a higher standards, or let's say a more international standards.
Now, before this opened, was there any type of concern in your mind because of the kind of services that you were offering? I mean, we know throughout East and Southeast Asia, there's many of these kind of businesses, but they're all a little odd, if you know what I mean. Did people come and say to you, oh, is it one of those funny ones? I mean, did you try to distance yourself away from the, the ones that say, as other people would put it, offer extra service? And how did you distance yourself with them?
Basically, there is first an issue of license, and we really one of the first a clear constraint that we give to ourselves is to get the proper license, meaning that, for example, we don't provide massages, full body massages. This is a license that first is difficult to get, and as you just mentioned, there is a strong connotation behind. So we clearly wanted to get away from it. So we concentrate on our core business, which is really a nail and waxing, pretty clearly defined by the license. And also, I will say, the service that we provide, it's clear to the customer that we are very professional. The price also showing that only some people can have access to. And last thing, we are very clear in our policy, meaning it's every paper, every flyers, every advertising clearly mention our professionalism.
I suppose actually one of the advantages that you would have right now, because Vietnam has only opened up in the last few years to foreign investors, in that you're offering a service there, which is probably very difficult to find. Vietnam is getting a lot more foreigners that are going there, a lot more tourists that are going there. Is this also part of your customer base, the people that are, say, coming from abroad and going to Vietnam?
Definitely. I mean, the first answer to that is we located in an area which is called a suburb, precisely called District 7 or An Phu, where actually this is the area where most of the Asian expats, namely the Korean, the Japanese, the Taiwanese people, Singaporean people, are basically settled down when they are expatriated in Vietnam. In addition to those people, I would say the new middle class or high class society of Vietnam is going to buying property. So basically, it's an area of between 1 to 2 million people having the salary, the wealth to get access to our service. Of course, in addition to that, we want to target tourists. We want to target other type of expatriates, because it's true that our positioning in terms of pricing is more middle class, high class of local Vietnamese as well as expatriates.
You know, just out of curiosity, I mean, we've seen in the last few years, companies and small businesses, let's say, that were operating out of China, we've seen them move to places like Vietnam, even Cambodia, because wages in China have increased. What is the wage situation in Vietnam?
Actually, you're totally correct. When I was mentioning the expatriate population coming into Vietnam, we can clearly see more and more Chinese expatriates coming into Vietnam, mostly the head of owner of factories, textile factories that transfer their business in Vietnam. Today, some governmental statistics or some foreign statistics show that in terms of average salary, there is a difference between 10 to 20% in between Vietnam and China. So yes, more and more Asian companies, like again Taiwanese or Chinese, bringing new business into Vietnam. So they're developing, and they also get out of the textile industry. More and more, we can see electronic manufacturing and factory being implemented in Vietnam nowadays for the last six months to 1 year.
You know, your business, I think you fall into a really unique category, because we've seen there have been a number of reports, of course, that Vietnam wants to become one of the what they call health tourism destinations. And it's something that they're working for. So this must be really good for you, because you are offering a service that, let's say, if somebody is going there for something, they probably wouldn't be able to find anywhere else.
Yeah, definitely. Today, this service is pretty unique in Vietnam. Again, the quality that we are providing is unique. And again, our location, we are very close to the what we call the French Vietnamese Hospital, which is one of the higher level of standards hospital in Vietnam. There are some more and more, as you mentioned, clinics, aesthetic clinics. So yes, it's part of this new trend of offering international again standards and quality in this industry, aesthetic, and with again high level of hygiene and health.
And that was my conversation with Philippe, one of the owners of Smooth Waxworks in Vietnam. You can find out more information about them by going to their website, www.smoothwaxworks.com. That's smoothwaxworks.com. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. If you wish to contact us, our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. That's focus@pcjmedia.com. We're going to end today with a group from Vietnam called 365 and the song Oh My Love. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. Bye-bye, everyone.